This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is The Morning Run, and you're listening to Wong Xiaoning and Lin Mark. It's 7:06 in the morning, 12th of October, a Monday. And in about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking to James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at the University of Tasmania, on the political developments in Sabah. For now, let's recap how markets closed on Friday. Because the Nikkei was down 0.1%, Hang Seng was down 0.3%, Shanghai was up 1.7%, Straits Times Index in Singapore was down 0.4%, and our FBM KLCI was actually up 0.7%. Meanwhile, in US, the Dow closed up 0.6%, S&P 500 0.9%, while the Nasdaq had a stellar day. It was up 1.4%. But to give us some color on where global markets are heading, we are going to speak to Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer at Jevons Global. Good morning, Kingsley. Now, the MSCI Asia Pacific Index is currently trading at a lower price earnings ratio to the S&P 500. Are those valuations justified? And do you think investors should perhaps look at increasing their holdings of Asia-Pacific markets? What do you think?
Certainly, we think there's value in the Asia-Pacific. I think what you're highlighting there is maybe a consequence of this move into megatech stocks in the United States, which are now looking to be a little bit stretched in our view in terms of valuations. That doesn't mean you'd sell them all. It just means that we need to be looking for other opportunities. And Asia Pacific is really presenting those opportunities. In particular, we're starting to see some strength in areas like autos, which have been really weak for some years. And that's starting in places like China and Korea. So, yeah, we definitely think it's a good time to be looking at Asia Pac stock.
And would you have any preference in terms of country allocation then?
At the present time, we have been increasing our investments in Japan. Korea, I think, as I mentioned, South Korea is interesting. And for a long time, we've held tech in Taiwan. I think the conditions in China in terms of their economy and COVID have improved a lot. And therefore, it's a good time to be looking at the Chinese stocks. But we're really still doing some research there to figure out where the new trends might be going forward.
And since you mentioned China, let's look at the yuan, you know, because it's had its best quarter in 12 years, almost earning this title of a safe haven asset. Do you think this is a realistic change of perception? Is it just a justifiable one?
Look, long term, I think a move towards the yuan for at least trading commodities makes a lot of sense. I mean, China is, as you know, the dominant consumer of commodities worldwide. And historically, they were always priced in US dollars from oil through iron ore. I think now what you're seeing is that the natural emergence of yuan for trade purposes is increasing. And of course, whilst Chinese imports have been down a little bit, their export economy is firming. So I think as more countries trade with China, it's logical that the yuan would strengthen. But the big driver in the short term is the current account deficit, which has been very strongly in surplus in China, mainly due to those weak imports offset by export strength out of China.
But is it still far off in terms of being an international currency or even replacing the US dollar?
I think it's still very far off in terms of replacing the US. You know, the US dollar is so deeply integrated into financial systems that I think that day is still distant. But I think if we're looking at commodities, certainly I think we're already there in a way. And that naturally means a relatively slow transition, but I think the direction is clear.
And looking at your own country, I mean, there was a recent budget that's been described as a cash splash consisting of tax cuts, wage subsidies and property grants. Is this the kick the economy needs or has it missed its mark? What's your review on it?
I certainly think that the budget was well conceived in terms of providing the necessary extra support. Where perhaps it was a little bit weak is in those sectors that clearly have been the hardest hit. So tourism is one of those clearly, and also hospitality. And there weren't really a lot of measures in the budget for those sorts of sectors. They were mainly to do with support for capital expenditure in business and also taxes, both income taxes and other measures. And I think for those weak sectors, no one's going to be spending, making new capital expenditure there. So that was one area of weakness. The other area where I think they missed an opportunity was with the university sector, which has been weak for similar reasons. There was some token money for R&D, but it runs out very quickly. And I think that that is an area of long-term weakness the country needs to address.
And Kingsley, staying in Australia, right? What do you think about the Australian stock market? Still down, the ASX is still down 8% on the year-to-date basis. Do you see any bargains there?
I think that where we are seeing strength is what I referred to earlier with the commodities. So it's been a very mixed bag with the Australian market. As you know, I mean, financials is a really, really big part of the Australian market, pushing upwards of 30%. And look, it's just been outside of the fintechs. It's just been terrible in financials. And that's one reason why you're seeing the index down 8%. But look, in the gold sector in particular, we think is very strong right now. We're going into Diggers and Dealers, the annual conference this week, and I expect we'll see a bit of price action in the junior miners simply because of these strong conditions for Chinese imports of commodities. And other parts of the market, we'll just have to wait and see. I think it's going to be slow recovery.
And meanwhile, you mentioned airlines, right? Because globally, they're having a tough time. Do you think airlines can survive solely on government assistance? Or is this a return to normality almost non-negotiable? So are you a bull or bear in this sector?
We remain still fairly bearish on airlines. And the main reason for that is that this is an industry that really uses a lot of capital and it needs a high capacity utilization. You know, airlines don't make money unless the planes are 85% full or more. And clearly they're empty right now and they're often parked. So I think that, you know, absent, you know, a sudden end to this pandemic, and a bout of revenge tourism, which I think we'd all love to go to faraway places and have some fun. I think absent that, it's going to be a real long, tough grind for the airline industry.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer at Jevons Global, saying that it's still going to be very, very tough times for airlines because, yes, most of them are still grounded. And even if those that are the few that are flying, it's just not enough considering the cash burn. And we can see this just back home. I mean, the headlines are covered as to whether Mars can survive, AirAsia can survive, AirAsia X can survive. And then in the US, we're seeing, you know, job cuts, 16,000, 17,000. And even AirAsia has said to say, has come out to say that they're going to cut 10% of their workforce. So till travel resumes, which I think some analysts expect only in 2023, it's going to be difficult. What do you think, Lynn?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Kingsley when it comes to his bearish sentiment on airlines, because it really doesn't look like it's going to go anywhere soon. And the question now is whether or not even some of our large airlines, whether or not they can survive until, you know, some of the worst case scenarios paints it as 2020, 24, 25 before international air travel returns to pre-COVID levels. And especially for some of the big international carriers, can they pivot to becoming domestic or regional players with all of the baggage that they have on hand with them at this present point in time? I mean, AirAsia's second quarter results were terrible. They've announced that they are closing down AirAsia Japan and they're not going to fund AirAsia India. So, you know, how much longer can they survive on the reduced air travel that they have? And of course, the aviation industry is also heavily dependent on oil. And we do have some OPEC Plus news as well this morning, specifically that OPEC Plus has a new headache, that Libya has just reopened its biggest oil fields. Now, we know that the alliance has been trying to curb global oil supplies. But according to a Bloomberg source, the Libyan oil field will start pumping 40,000 barrels a day before reaching 300,000 barrels in 10 days. So this would essentially double Libya's overall daily output.
Yeah, Libya is actually exempt from the OPEC Plus supply cuts, even though it's a member due to the civil war it faced. So it's begun to restart oil fields and ports since the country's conflict eased up. Now, OPEC Plus is led by Saudi Arabia and Russia. They meet next at the end of November. So you've got a double whammy. You've got definitely a reduction in terms of demand as most economies are facing somewhat of a global recession. And at the same time, now you seem to have a situation where the oil majors are happy to pump away. So not surprisingly, Brent crude this morning is down to $42 per barrel, is down 0.7%. And I think, you know, we probably might see some pressure on the oil price. But up next, we'll be speaking to James Chin, Professor of Asian Studies at the University of Tasmania on Sabah politics, and asking him whether we might have a new Prime Minister by Tuesday. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.